I don't mind my hands going
out. Okay, I think we'll call the meeting to order. And we'll ask her to call the roll.
Chairperson Joyner.
Present.
Vice Chairperson Robertson.
Here.
Member DePaul.
Here.
Member Figueroa.
Here.
Member Matuska.
Here.
Member Messina.
Here.
Member Schaefer.
Here.
The quorum's present.
Thank you very much. And just for the record, this is the Carson City Charter Review Committee meeting. It's May 20th, 5:30 p.m. And we're going to open our first public comment period. We'll have another one at the end of the meeting. If there's anyone in the public that would like to speak at this time, feel free. Seeing none, we will move on. We have minutes of the April 23rd meeting of this committee. Has everyone had a chance to read those? I do have one correction on page 4. I think it was item at 420.32. Just the spelling of my name. Not a big deal. It's not a big deal. I can live with it, but that's okay. With that, any other corrections or comments? If not, I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes as amended.
I second that motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Christine. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Regarding the agenda, any comments on the agenda, any modifications, any concerns? If not, we'll proceed as written. We'll go on to item 6. This is an item carried over from our April 23rd meeting. Morris White was asking us to consider changing the charter regarding school district trustees and their election cycle, and we had asked to postpone this. I believe Mr. Munn is going to look into it a little bit more, and Mr. White is also here. So, Randy, would you like to start?
Sure.
Okay.
It wasn't clear to me in our last meeting's discussion whether this was intended to be a charter amendment. I think we came to the general conclusion that it's not part of the charter now, and that school board trustees are handled by state law. And I would be surprised if the legislature wanted to carve out one school district for one city's charter. I'd be shocked if they did that, frankly. But on the merits of the matter, the discussion was that under NRS 386-200-8, where the Board of County Commissioners may, by resolution, change the boundaries of a school district's election areas, if you construe this statute the way it is written in total, that section goes on to refer you back to subsection 3 of the statute, which refers to a initiative petition kind of process by the citizens, that 10% of the citizens have to come forward by petition and initiate this process, in which the Board of Supervisors would have a public hearing and the trustees would have to come down and basically consent. Upon those conditions, the board could adopt a resolution, essentially setting up kind of a trustees' ward kind of vote. So I don't see this as a unilateral right of the Board of Supervisors, and I'm not sure what the committee wants to do with that. It's not like you can make a recommend to the board that they do something, because they don't have the authority to do anything unless the citizens bring it to them.
Thank you, Mr. Munn. Mr. White, would you like to let us know what you are thinking at this point?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Morris White. Thank you, Mr. Munn, for your opinion in this matter. Obviously, I would defer to Mr. Munn's expertise. However, in view of the fact that this possible ward voting in the primary for supervisors could potentially create even more confusion about how we vote for which particular office here in Carson City, that situation has come about by an action of this commission, whereby It was suggested to the Board of Supervisors. It did go to the legislature. It was approved and then vetoed, and then that's how we came to this situation where in November we're going to vote to advise the supervisors to take more action on this matter. I think it, in light of that, that this whole thing was initiated within this body, that it would be advisable that this body advise the Board of Supervisors that there potentially could be more confusion about how we vote, and that you want them to take a look at it and, as an advisory, just simply take a look at it and perhaps move forward with what they're allowed to do within the already existing NRS.
So you're saying, Mr. White, that if the citizens advised with the majority of the board that they liked primary voting in wards, that this should perhaps go along with that? I mean, I knew it would take a separate action, but you're saying because that would then be a confusing thing, that you're voting in the wards in the primary, and that school district trustees then, because they go at large, would be confusing to the populace?
Yes, as already noted, there's some confusion as to how the voting takes place. And so that would be my suggestion at this point, is that you just simply send an advisory note to the supervisors, this potential confusion, and they should take action to mitigate that under what's already available then for them to do. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. White? Comments, discussion on this issue?
I did have a question, okay. Mr. White. I thank you, first of all, and I can understand how the question of, you know, does voting on one for one office follow if we change the ward voting for one office. I see how the question follows. But are you now advocating that potential confusion for electing supervisors might be a word of caution for the proponents of the ward-only voting?
No, sir. I am a proponent of ward voting in primary and then voting at large in the general. And I think it should just simply follow when you have these seats lower on the ticket as they are, that they should reflect one another. So the school board trustees would certainly, as Mr. Munn has explained, would be a totally separate action.
So your suggestion ways to avoid confusion on the actual voting ballot, then, it sounds like.
Yes, I am suggesting that entirely, and will continue to advocate that the school district trustees be voted on by ward, but obviously in another venue separate from this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Glover.
For the record, Alan Glover, the Carson City Clerk Recorder. Some interest in this topic in having drawn the boundaries for the school district. When the school Board of Trustees adopted their redistricting plan a couple of years ago, they specifically in their motion put in there that they wanted to be elected at large. It was a conscious decision on their part. My personal opinion is that this is an issue that belongs to them and not the Board of Supervisors. It's their board. But as the clerk, the issue comes up on creation of precincts. There are four wards, and we have the city divided up precincts by ward. So if you're in Precinct 101, you're in Ward 1 and so forth. There are seven school board districts. We would have to create 40-some precincts to handle because the school district's lines cross the ward lines and they cross precinct lines in there. So to keep the votes separate in each one of those, we would have to then go back and redraw all the precinct lines and go from the 23 precincts to 40-plus precincts in there. And from a financial point of view, Dominion voting system that programs our elections charges by the number of precincts that you have, not by the number of voters or not by the number of candidates or anything. They charge by the number of precincts. So every time you add a precinct, you got to pay them more money. And it's not inexpensive to do that. So I was trying to figure out, kind of get to what Maurice went. I was telling him I kind of got my lesson learned pretty well at the legislature because I kind of made the suggestion that maybe we go to, like, 4 school board members and then elect some at large so we could put them all together. This is a topic that the legislature and the education community holds very dear to them. You don't mess with their how they elect school board members. And like I say, I found that out the hard way, so I just throw that in.
Appreciate that very much. Yeah, I was going to say, this is a really, as Mr. Munn started with, and we discovered last meeting, this is really a state issue, and the legislature, like you say, they speak very vociferously on these kind of issues, and they have a lot of input from the people that are interested in education. So, yeah. But any other comments or discussion?
I would say that the request here is that we, as the Charter Review Committee, just make an advisory request of the Board of Supervisors that they consider it in whatever appropriate process. And I'm not sure that we really can do that. When I look at our charter, the purpose of the committee is to advise the board with regard to recommendations of the committee concerning necessary amendments to this charter. So if this is just a, hey, board, you ought to consider, but we don't, we're not asking you to make to do anything to change our charter because the school districting doesn't fall within our charter, then I don't think it really falls within our purview to recommend that to the board at all.
I know that one discussion we had last meeting was that Mr. White or anyone could address the school district themselves and start there. And it really isn't of you. And one thing I've asked all the applicants to do is consider where does it fall within the charter when you're requesting something of a charter review committee. And so on its face, it doesn't belong here. Yeah. Yes.
One thing that we do when we have a joint meeting is we put together all the items that have been discussed. And at that time, if the board sees fit, seeing what we talked about, and if they'd like to do something with it, they can make that decision at the joint meeting at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It can be part of our discussion with them, sure. Okay. Is there any action to entertain a motion on this issue? If not, it looks like it dies from lack of affirmative action. That's proper terminology.
Well, maybe I can do this. I mean, I went back and looked at the history of some of the motions that were made by previous charter review committees, and some of those motions were that, and I'm gonna do it. I move that we do not recommend to the board that they make changes to the school trustees' districting as a change to our charter, the Carson City Charter.
Okay, I'll take that as a motion. Have a second?
I'll second that.
Who wants to second that? I'll take Mr. Robertson.
He's older than me.
Motion by Mr. Schaefer, second by Mr. Robertson to not forward this item. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. White, but we advise you to direct it to the board, or more likely to the school district, or, if you're brave enough, to the state legislature. Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're going to move on to item number 7, discussion of possible action and a request. This also is a carryover from our April 23rd meeting. Mr. Vitale, I talked to Mr. Vitale today. He said he might not be able to be here tonight because of a conflict of scheduling. And we carried this over because we were getting other input. And you've seen your packet. We have had other comments weigh in on this, both pro and con. Mr. Glover is here. He spoke a moment ago. The position paper that you have in your packet, that is from Mr. Glover. It wasn't attributed to him, but I want you to understand that is his position paper. We had comments from several people in the community, including a former district attorney, Mr. Noel Waters, and others that I'm not familiar with, but I think it's very strong opinions on both sides, and this issue is probably the most preeminent issue that comes up just by numbers each year. So, again, this is continued over from last meeting. I think we know the position of Mr. Vitale. He wants ward voting in both primary and general. This would run parallel to and not conflict with the advisory question that will be on the ballot, is on the ballot for November of this year, the advisory on ward voting and primary only. This doesn't affect that. This would go after that to the board and possibly to the legislature. So on that, I'll entertain any discussion that we have. Mr. Messina.
Okay, as I've said numerous times in the past, we have five people on the in the city that set policy, and as a voter, I want to vote for all five of them. I don't want to just vote for the mayor and one supervisor in my ward. And I want all five people to vote in the best interest of the entire city, not just a single ward. I think we're too small a town to set up wards as competing areas. I think it can create divisive divisions. And that's where I'm at.
Thank you, Mr. Messina. Other comments? In a moment, I'm going to open up public comment, but I do want to make one comment while I can on Mr. Glover's position paper. I think he did an excellent job. I want to compliment him on kind of summarizing the issues that have come up over the years and at the legislature on this issue. Regarding that we are a small community and a number of people could elect someone. I will say this, from anecdotal information I received from watching this issue and lobbying on one side of it for a community I worked for and I was paid to lobby for, in those communities where they most recently adopted ward voting in primary and general, it actually increased their voter turnout. They were afraid that the incumbents wouldn't get reelected. They did get reelected, and the community I'm talking about is North Las Vegas. Our leader in the assembly, Marilyn Kirkpatrick, is from that community, and this is her information she imparted to the community, to the legislature, when she was advocating for this. So it can actually, when you think about it, a person working their ward can work that ward longer and harder than they can if they're running the whole city, running for the whole city, and they can get more voter turnout. And that's, I think, a big plus, is that anytime you can increase our apathy of voting and doing your constitutional right in this United States, I think it's a great thing. So that's one major plus. And I understand all the issues on the other side. I do want to criticize one thing Mr. Glover said in his report, and it's not a criticism of anything substantive. He used the word parochial, that it creates parochialism in your... When I used that word, the legislature, when I was lobbying for Sparks, I said it creates territoriality and parochialism. I was told don't ever use those kind of words in this hall, because even though half the assembly is seated by teachers, I was told don't ever use those words. You're condescending and talking to others. And, you know, it wasn't meant that way. But anyway, thank you for using that word, because I like that word too. Okay. If there's no other discussion here.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I did want to make some comments. Mr. Glover, thank you for the position paper. I think the numbers are the numbers pertaining to the voter turnout. I think that they are relevant to this discussion. I think the effort to encourage greater voter participation is a laudable effort, and whether or not the ward voting is the best is will accomplish that, frankly, is not even my primary concern today. I think we have a lot of moving parts right now. We have the advisory question going forward. What Mr. Battelle has, a primary question going forward for a ward voting compromise system, essentially, for primary only ward voting, essentially compromise system. I believe that's even how the supervisors are describing it. Mr. Battelle is proposing another track, and you, as you explained, not to conflict with it, but to run in tandem with it. I find that to be confusion. And we have another moving part. In my mind, at least, we have. I was flipping through it as I was talking. I haven't found it yet, but we actually have a provision in our charter that the supervisors, one name only, can pass straight to the general election if that candidate gets majority. Gets more than 50% or 50% or more.
50% plus one vote.
If that candidate gets 50% plus one vote in in the primary. So I think it's relevant to this discussion to consider, too, that we could have a result where someone gets 50% plus one from one ward with a low voter turnout in a midterm election, and they pass straight to the general election. I'm not sure that that's great for a great result for our voting system. But we don't even have the final language on what a proposed charter change would look like from either the advisory question or from Mr. Vitale. And we don't really know if the final product would try to address that issue to the extent that someone sees it as a problem or just a unique characteristic of this voting system. But I think that that's another moving part that we have to consider when we're talking about the ward voting system. Well, so for now, I really, my belief is I don't think I would be supporting putting more pizzas in motion. We've got a lot in motion right now.
Okay, I just want to respond to two things you said. I can clarify one, both of them. In the proposal that went through the two houses of the legislature and was vetoed the last two sessions of the legislature, they changed that one provision. It would not allow you to have 50% plus one. They took that out. So if you made it primary and general ward vote only, you have to have the two.
Give that to me again, please.
Okay. The way it was amended from the charter that reads in our Carson City Charter today, right now in our general system, you can win, as you described. If you get the primary, 50% of the vote plus one, you win outright. If they go to vote in primary and general ward voting only, they took that provision out. So the top two vote gainers have to go into the general. Okay, in that ward.
Point of clarification, you said that was written into the law that was vetoed.
Yes.
So that what you're saying is not a fact.
No, it's not a fact.
Okay.
But I'm saying that was the proposal.
That's the proposal.
That was a proposal. And I believe Mr. Vitale, I thought he did provide that, but that would be worked out. You know, that's a very good argument, I think, against that maintaining itself if you're going to have primary and general ward voting only. So that item was a hot topic, let me just say that. And I can't remember the other point I was going to make, something you said, but it'll come up. Mr. Glover, did you want to address this?
Again, I was just going to say that is in the ballot question. The board specifically, we asked them to put that in, because it is a real problem. So in the question that will be on the November ballot, it also amends the charter to take that provision out for supervisors only. All the other good people can win with 50% plus one, but supervisors can't. So.
Well, Mr. Glover, let me if I can ask you a follow-up on that. What's in our packet, I think this was the same it was in our packet last time. Where's the advisory question in here? The resolution. Okay. So, okay. Has the advisory question actually been drafted then?
Correct, and approved by the Board of Supervisors. The status at this moment is that the committees to write the arguments for and against have started their work. They should be done. I forgot what date we gave them, sometime in June. And as soon as the arguments for and against are prepared, then they switch and write the rebuttals, and so those will be available after the June primary. But the ballot question itself has been approved by the board and is ready to go.
Well, I have a ballot question, a number one here, as part of the resolution, and refers to ward-only voting in ward supervisor primary elections with an at-large general election runoff between the two highest primary vote receivers in each ward, and that's being read or intended to mean that there has to be
two
in the runoff?
Sure is.
Okay.
Yeah. That's very important in this, and Rob, the chairman's right.
That's a great point.
Mr. Glover, was anything else in your position paper that you wanted to reinforce? Or?
The only thing I'd say, Mr. Chairman, you're right. When it comes to the North Las Vegas issue, that's the one, frankly, that has the has the clerks a little concerned, because presently in Carson, we don't really care where you all live. I mean, we try and get you into your precinct, and you have to live there. But if you're challenged on the grounds of residency, you get to vote everything on the ballot that you possibly could. You know, president, senate, right on down. So in the case of Carson, everybody gets to vote. They've moved, and they get challenged on residency. They still get to vote for supervisor and school board members. If you go toward voting and you're challenged on the grounds of residency, you can be denied the right to vote in that race. North Las Vegas, the incumbent won by one vote, and the person they allowed somebody to vote that did not live in that district. And last I heard, that is still, they seated the incumbent, but it's still in federal court. That has, we don't like recounts, and we don't like close races, and that's the one that's got us concerned. Because you, I can tell you, you can find people that don't live in their district after any election. I can guarantee you that, because we're the last people to know. We try and correct it every election, get them to change, do address changes, and so forth. But in the big scheme of things, it's not terribly important within Carson City. It is in other areas, especially if you have split Senate and Assembly districts and things like that. But if that's a clerk issue, things that we worry about.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Glover on his paper? Other comments?
I have.
Okay, Donna.
I just wanted to make sure that everybody was aware that, you know, Mr. Vitale was concerned about this because in the primary, you're spending money, and if you do get over 50%, you're only going to be advanced to the general. So you're not saving any money. That candidate is not saving any money by advancing to the general, because they're still going to have to produce more money to run for the general also. And I wanted to point that out, because that was one of the biggest concerns, was to allow more individuals to be able to run for office and get elected. Okay. And also, I would be in favor of waiting to see what the ballot question says and the rebuttals before we make any sort of decision on this, because I think it's going to give us a lot of information on how it's written.
Since we are appointed by the supervisors and some others, and because it's going to go on the ballot, I don't know why we're really even dealing with it at this point. I mean, it's going to happen. The people get to vote on it, yes or no, and the supervisors will do with what they want at that point. So I'm not a fan of ward voting. I don't think it's in a town this size, 6 square miles, whatever it is, that we shouldn't be voting for all of them. I want them all to represent me, and I want them to make good decisions for the city. So, I mean, we've beat this thing to death, and we have for years. So it's in a position where something's going to happen with it one way or the other. I would say if we're to consider this thing, it should be 2 years from now, if it doesn't, if depending on what happens on the vote in November.
Again, that's too bad Mr. Vitale isn't here. He's not reinforcing or wanting to wait for the primary only. And there's a lot of folks. You saw some of the comments come in. This is a parallel issue. It's still people who feel very strongly that it should be not just the baby step, not just primary, but primary and general. So it's a separate issue. It's going to come back up with the legislature. It always does. It's not going to go away. So it's a separate issue. This was the compromise. As Mr. Matuska said, it was the baby step, and I can understand the confusion and wanting to wait and see where this one goes, first of all, to see where people line up on that. It's a complicated issue, and it's a very emotional issue for a lot of folks. So, other comments? Discussion? Mr. Jamie.
Yeah, I just wanted to
comment, and you probably know this, but to Mr. Robertson's comment, it is advisory only on the ballot. And I mean, I'm sure you knew that, but I just wanted to remind everybody that regardless of the actions that the board may or may not take, it's advisory only.
As we are.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah, good point. Good point.
Okay. If there's no other discussion, I don't see any need to push this to another meeting. I think we've had all the issues raised, pro and con. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, do you want any public comment?
Oh, sorry. Thank you very much. I was so used to it. I thought Alan was a public comment. There's other folks that have joined us. Any public comment on this item? We're talking about the issue of ward voting, both general and primary. I see no public comment. We'll close public comment. Thank you, Mr. Munn. And now I can entertain a motion. We don't have to have a motion. It can die from lack of action. And I think it just did. Okay. We'll note that there's no action taken on item 7. And we'll move on to number 8, possible action and discussion on the issue of faxes, mails, and postal service arriving at City Hall, Board of Supervisors, and what happens with that correspondence. This was an item brought up by Supervisor Jim Shirk. I believe Mr. Shirk is here. We asked that he came and brought this verbally last session. We asked that he submit it to City Hall. He's done that. It's properly before us at this time. And I would ask Mr. Shirk to come address us on this issue. And again, I want to challenge Mr. Shirk. I've asked each of the applicants to advise us where in the charter they feel this would lie, if this is a charter issue or, more properly, maybe a policy and bylaw issue. So, thank you.
Thank you, Chairman and board members. Jim Shirk, Carson City residents. The reason this is on the agenda is the policy of the Board of Supervisors can be that mail and so forth be not given to the Board of Directors or Board of Supervisors. It could be overridden and handed to other individuals. It is a policy of there could be a policy of the Board of Supervisors. I'm not saying there is, but there could be a policy of the Board of Supervisors that grants the right not to give U.S. Postal Service mail that is addressed to Mayor, Board of Supervisors, and so forth, to those individuals. I think that's inappropriate, and I think that's wrong. I don't think any policy can override the right to receive one's email, fax, or U.S. Postal Service letters. In whatever direction it is given to, it cannot be not given to the person who should be the recipient of that mail. There could not be, and there should not be, a policy that overrides that right of the individual to receive his letters or faxes or emails. So maybe staff could answer. This is my, as I said, I brought it to this board as a verbal. You told me to come back with an agenda item, which I'm doing. And I think it needs to be addressed, whether we can receive the mail that's addressed to us.
Thank you for that. Did you find a place in the charter that this would be addressed?
I didn't find it, but I've been forwarded information, which I did not bring that, because it does say policy can be of the Board of Supervisors to direct staff in any manner they see fit, and that could be you don't have to give them the U.S. Postal Service letter, which I disagree with, and that's why I'm here today.
Okay. Mr. Munn?
I'll address it on behalf of staff. I mean, since the charter was created, it created three branches of city government. You have a judiciary, you have an executive department, and you have a legislative department. The Board of Supervisors are in the legislative department. It's the responsibility of the executive department to open the mail and figure out where it needs to go quickly and make it happen, because there's legal issues regarding the mail and its timely management. In that process, it has been left to the city manager's office to manage that process and make judgment calls as to where that mail should be distributed. It came to Supervisor Shirk's attention that sometimes mail that is addressed to the Board of Supervisors gets diverted to other departments because it needs to be taken care of, and in the judgment of the city manager's office, that it's a city function, not a policy function or something that really that the board should be bothered with. And so it has been the tradition that the executive department has been relied upon to do that. The Board of Supervisors has not taken it upon themselves to dictate any policy to the city manager regarding how mail shall be managed. I think in Mr. Shirk's frustration in the board not doing that, he has brought it to this committee to see if it could be put into the charter. I'll reserve my opinion on that.
Well, I will make note, it wasn't frustration that brought us to this juncture. I wasn't frustrated by it. I think I'm legally entitled to my mail. That's why I'm here. I'm not frustrated by anything. I'm here just asking that my mail be given to me, that it's addressed to me.
I believe just, I don't want to go back and forth with you. This all came up because it was a public records request, and it got diverted to legal and to the appropriate agency to handle the public records request in a timely manner. We have 5 working days to get it done, get a response out, and so it is the judgment of the city manager that this is the type of mail that goes to where it needs to go and get addressed immediately without giving it to the supervisors because it wasn't a policy matter.
And I'll just bear with me, and I agree with him. I wholeheartedly agree that that's the way a manner should have been followed, but the trouble is I wasn't given any notice that mail that was addressed to me wasn't given to me. So I agree that that's the way the manner should have been handled, and I agree with that. What I'm saying is that letter should have came. We looked at this. We believe this needs to go to the legal department, ASAP, because of the legal ramifications if we don't respond to it. But this is how it's being handled, which I wasn't given that directive. I was left out of the loop. So that's all I'm asking. I agree with everything Mr. Munn said. That was a proper procedure. But I should have been notified of that because it was addressed to me.
I'm just going to give you my input on this from serving on other boards. I can see what you're both saying, but I don't see what would be the issue with, as Mr. Shirk says, an item comes addressed to the board. That person sending that letter assumes that as a board member, you're going to see that. Your executive staff certainly has to take care of it because it's an operational issue. Everyone understands that. But you see that, oh, this came in, this is how we're handling it. If you have a problem with how we're handling this, talk to your chief executive officer, and they can advise you on why they did it that way. But that person's going to call you and say, hey, did you get that letter that I went in for what'd you say it was for?
Public records
request. Okay. Yeah, great. I saw it. It's being taken care of. Just so you can answer that constituent and say, yeah, it's being taken care of. I certainly see that. What's wrong? How is that to giving something up that these supervisors get to see that mail came in that was addressed to them and it's being handled? I guess that's a question for Mr. Gioni because he's representing the city manager's office. I don't see what else.
You know, I think I wasn't involved in the situation. My assumption is that if there's mail that's addressed to the Board of Supervisors, that's a public body. It's not an individual. It is a group of individuals, and the city management staff has a responsibility, while the board is not in session and active, to act on behalf of that body. So if a letter comes in that says, Board of Supervisors, please fill this public records request, that body is not in session, so to speak. They're not active. And city management staff has a responsibility to manage that mail properly moving forward. Now, I don't know if this was a case where the mail was addressed specifically to an individual supervisor and that was intercepted, or if it was addressed to the Board of Supervisors. But that would be my comment from a management perspective. It's, if it's addressed broadly to the Board of Supervisors and that board is not active, then that function needs to continue. The business of government needs to continue. It can't stop until the board meets again and has that letter properly agendized to be addressed, you know, a month from now, and which is what Randy commented on.
I appreciate that. I think we are getting in the weeds a bit. This is handled, and I mean, I don't know. I don't see it as a charter issue. I just don't find it. And that's a challenge I've made of all the applicants. Other comments, Larry?
I disagree with you. I don't think this is a charter issue. I think it's an operational issue between staff and the Board of Supervisors.
I addressed it there. That's why I'm here.
Appreciate that.
Well, I'm not convinced that it's a charter issue either, but I would like to encourage staff to maybe CC all the Board of Supervisors and their packets of information that has been received while they're off duty. And, you know, they can get it in their packets and just let them know that it was already handled, but if they have any questions. I mean, I think that would be a fair compromise. And because, to be perfectly honest, I don't know if the information I send to the Board of Supervisors or to the city offices gets to them. I do not get a response. I do not get a response that says, we've received your communication with us. Thank you. Nothing. So I can understand Mr. Shirk's concern. So even though I don't believe it's a charter item, at this time, unless you can show us where it could go and what it refers to, I think there is an issue and a legitimate issue and concern, and I want you to know it's just not you, it's other members of the public. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know where this is going to go, Mr. Shirk, but do you have any other comments for us?
No, thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion?
I saw a spot where it could go, but I wasn't sure, sorry about the raspiness, on Section 2080. And it just seems, too, with just the spirit of what the Board of Supervisors are all about, to communicate and to receive as well as to give information. But Section 2080, and it's in the context, so I'm just taking it out of context, of Board of Supervisors, discipline of members, other persons, subpoena power. The board may, well, they're talking under item B, say order the attendance of witnesses. Granted, this is for, I guess, a discipline procedure, and the production of all papers relating to any business before the board. But I would think if there's some business before the board that that needs to be appreciated, that some of the basics, like, you know, the U.S. Post Office, I mean, really, that's so basic to our country, is that people should be able to receive correspondence. And like you're saying, if you send some correspondence, that you have some faith in our system of every effort being made to get that correspondence to that person. And I've been in settings where, you know, I'm gone for the summer from a work setting, but I still depend on receiving anything that's of a correspondence to me. And with a spirit, again, of what the Board of Supervisors are, and to receive information from the community and from their respective boards, I don't know, I think we maybe could look at this another way, or just, again, put it on our support groups to make sure that this is followed through.
I think we're just talking about process improvements. I see that the member of the public would like to speak. Go ahead.
I actually would. Lori Bagwell. I think on this issue what I would like to comment about is that I think the Board of Supervisors should receive their mail. It is the opportunity for the public to communicate when they can't come to a board meeting. So they might write a letter at night saying, this is what I think about what you did. And I think it's imperative that we know. Now, a solution, because they're right. The executive branch needs to be able to handle the mail and move on. So this is just a recommendation that maybe the new city manager and the board can look at, but you could create what's called a reading file. So all letters addressed to the Board of Supervisors would go into a reading file, and on it would be stamped whom in the executive department handled the correspondence. So you just make a stamp that says the manager's office handled it, the fire department got it, whoever got it. It goes in a reading file. You slap a little thing on the front, and each of the supervisors signs off. If they want to read them, they read them. If they don't, they don't. But that way, both sides had an opportunity to know what the public sent in and that it was indeed acted upon. So it's just a recommendation. I don't think it should be in the charter, but I absolutely agree with Mr. Shirk that you should see your mail. So just a process that maybe can be communicated.
Thank you, Ms. Bagwell. That's a good suggestion.
If I can make a comment, I too agree that we ought to be careful making this an item for an amendment or a change to our charter. And would only offer this, and it might be my ignorance a little bit, but our community is a little bit different. You know, we are a combined community, and we are governed under our charter that is kind of a combination between county and city. And when I read the executive department and the duties of the mayor, or the mayor's, which I'm going to assume is the mayor's office and staff, but shall serve as a member of the board and preside over its meetings. And as head of the government of Carson City for all ceremonial purposes and for purposes of military law. And then item number two is the mayor is entitled, shall perform such other duties as may be prescribed by ordinance or by the provisions of the NRS, which apply to a mayor or to the chair of a board of county commissioners. And I'm just, I just think I need to study this out a little bit to see, what are the responsibilities of a chair in a county commission? Is this something that might fit in our charter because we are a little bit different than a county or a city? But generally, I think it's a policy statement. I think if the policy needs to be changed, it needs to come in front of the elected body, and the Board of Supervisors vote on it amongst themselves and make that a policy change. But only in that regard would I say that if the mayor in our case serves in a different function than he might in the city of Reno or some other city, then maybe to consider. But that would be the only reason.
Thank you.
Well, I think we certainly have some discussion items to pass on to the board, but that's probably what it's going to be. Do I have any other discussion or comments, or anyone want to take action on this item? If not, it's duly noted, and we'll move on. Item number 9, another item, Supervisor Shirk, a discussion of possible action regarding the mayor of Carson City should be elected every 6 years and serve only 2 terms. This item is something that is highlighted in our charter under elections, how and when people are elected to their various offices, especially mayor. So this is properly before us. Mr. Shirk, would you like to explain further?
Thank you, Chairperson, or Chair Member. Members, got that wrong. Sorry. And Jim Shirk for the record. It's unusual standing. Usually you sit when you talk up there, so I appreciate your patience. I have asked for a chair over here, too, but no one seems to go with that agenda item as well. Yeah, but they don't go for that. But on the lighter side of things, what I'm asking for here is the mayor, when he is up for election or for re-election, it is during the same term that Ward 2 and Ward 4 are up for re-election or for election. Same dates, same ballots. Whereas Ward 1 and Ward 3 are in the opposite election years. So they can at any time put their hat in the ring to run for mayor and not jeopardize their position or their standing on the board. Whereas if you're in Ward 2 or Ward 4 and you wish to run for mayor, you would actually have to give up your right to run for board supervisors to run for mayor. It puts an unfair advantage on those two individuals, in the two opposite wards. And it's unfair, I think it's unconstitutional, that you're limiting who can run for mayor and who cannot by the simple charter we have right now. I'm not saying it's your fault, but we need to change that because it's unfair. And if you look at this, and logically speaking, the mayor can run for two terms, and he'd be running against Warden 1 and 3 at one time, and then he'd be running against 2 and 4 at the next time, or if he goes up for re-election, because that alternating 6 years, he would go against each ward respectively down the line, whereas right now he runs parallel with Ward 2 and 4, and it's a disadvantage to those wards, to those individuals, if they so desire to run for mayor. So I think it's an easy fix. The mayor can be elected for two terms, which right now, presently, he can only run three terms under the 4 years. That gives him the 12 years max. And this is a fair, across-the-board, and the no special elections. It would always happen in the general election as Ward 1 and 3 and with 2 and 4. So, and it does need to be a charter a review and I don't know if it would have to go to the legislature or if it can happen here, but that needs to be changed. It's not right in any shape or form. So,
and it would have to be ratified by the legislature. Mr. Messina.
Okay, let me see if I understand this, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but if a supervisor wants to run for mayor and it's not concurrent, he can still run for mayor and perform his function as a supervisor. If he loses, he continues to fill out his term as a supervisor, correct?
In Ward 1 and 3.
Right.
If it's not concurrent.
It's always concurrent. Ward 1 and 3 never run against the mayor. So they
but, but they could. They can be sitting supervisors and still run against the mayor.
Correct.
If they win, they become mayor, and then there has to be an appointment. You appoint a replacement.
Correct.
If they lose, they finish out their term. So it's not. I don't see where there's a disadvantage, unless I.
Well, if you're in Ward 2 or 4.
Mr. Mayor, some commentary. I think it's going to be germane to this discussion. If I could ask a question, though, before you give your comment.
Yes, please.
I just want to make sure that I'm understanding where are we looking at in the charter for which wards are voted on, which ward candidates are voted on in which election. I want to look at it.
Article 2, Section 2.010. That would be 2.0104.
The actual wards are in the they're not in the charter themselves. They're actually codified in the ordinances in the code.
So is it the ordinances then which say which wards are going to be voted on they're staggered elections essentially, but is it the
right.
It's the ordinances that specify that?
Yeah, it's historical. It's not necessarily written here. I mean, let me cut through a little bit. First off, in researching this, I got real curious and started looking at, like, well, everything's 4 years. Why is everything 4 years? Well, when I sort through into the Constitution, Article 15, Section 11 says the legislature shall not create any office of the tenure which shall be longer than 4 years. And there's a cited case in the annotations where at one time the legislature tried to transition, trustees into school boards, and they had one that was 5 years, and that was unconstitutional. So you can't go to 5-6 years without an amendment to the Constitution. That's the first hurdle.
The state constitution.
Uh-huh. So all these offices have to be 4 years. The problem is with any board is you're going to have an uneven number. And the statutes require that they stagger them so they're not all elected at the same time. So at some point when the city went from 3 supervisors to 5, the mayor got paired up with 2 others. And historically that has just continued down the road because you have to do it as equally as possible. And 3 and 2 make 5. You can't divide it any other way. And yes, it is unfair, but it is a systemic unfairness that's built in and has existed for a very long time. I don't know how to correct it.
Our judicial offices are 6 years, though.
And that's constitution.
Okay. And you were going to make a comment, though, about what Mr. Messina was questioning, whether a candidate can stand for election for supervisor and mayor at the same time. Yeah, and that raises that complicated question.
It's one office. It's one office. It has two titles.
And we also have a constitutional amendment that limits the terms of elected officials.
12 years.
To 12 years. It limits it to 12 years or three terms? Or is it both?
Well, yeah, it's going to be three terms because it's 12 years and three-fourths.
This kind of proposal, if we're splitting the office of the mayor out from the supervisors and putting them on a different term cycle or different election cycle, you would question also whether you're treating that as a separate office and how someone would, if they'd be able to daisy chain their time on the supervisors and get more time in the office of the mayor, too, I would think.
They just decided that question. It didn't fly.
No, but that's because the mayor and the supervisor were the same office, essentially.
Correct.
But if we're starting to tinker with how we elect the mayor, then we have to revisit the question.
Right.
Again,
but that circles back, if you know city government law, to the statutory non-charter kind of city where a mayor is actually a non-voting member of the board.
Right.
They're really a manager.
Right.
If they don't vote, it creates a whole different situation. Right. There is another solution. You'd have to change wards. Every 4 years. Now, I don't know how Roxy and Michelle will feel about this, but we could do that wife swap thing, and then you could live in Ward 1, and I don't know. There's a lot of different
this
things.
It could be on YouTube.
It could be
dynamic. You know that, right?
And I've got ABC on the phone. They're ready to sign the contract with the two.
Just so the chair knows, I did go speak to Alan Glover earlier about this. Mr. Munn's explanation about being on the Constitution didn't come up in my discussion with him. I just went to him and talked to him about the ordinances and so forth on the local level. I didn't look at the Constitution as had I known that, I probably would have pulled this agenda item. If we can't, I don't know if the Constitution could be amended to I think it's great difficulty, but keep in mind though, it's still, if you're in Ward 2 or 4 and you decide to run against the mayor, you have to, when you go down to his office, Alan Glover's office, to file, you can only file for one seat, and that is either mayor or board supervisor. That's a disadvantage to those two individuals who sit in that ward versus 1 and 3, which can go in at any time, put their name in, and run and not jeopardize anything. I think it's an unfair advantage. I don't think it's right. I think that's unconstitutional. But can something be done about it? I don't know. But it's worth looking at, I thought, and that's why I brought it here. So,
well, I have a couple things to say. I'm going to make a political statement here.
What are you running for?
First of all, the only people I believe should have six-year terms are the president and the vice president of the United States. So they don't have to worry about running for office as soon as they get in, and they can get their job done for 6 years and all this fighting over money. So that's my statement. I know I'm off the agenda item. But with that in mind, I totally get where you're coming from. You're at an unfair advantage as others who have been in your position. Normally what happens during the Charter Review Committee session is we usually get an agenda item that suggests a rotation of mayors, like Douglas County does. That is one way of resolving this problem, is you rotate mayors. But you are, and as you said, the other wards are at an unfair advantage. And I know we're not the only city that has this situation. So it would take legislation, I believe, to have to change that. And I'm really not in favor of the mayor or anyone else in a six-year term. I would prefer a four-year term, but yet I see that you're at an unfair advantage, and not just you personally, I mean those wards. So I think it needs to be looked at, and I think it's a serious situation because it's not fair. It's not right. And even if we look at rotating the mayor again and making it fair for everybody, then that may be the way to go. But we, wards 2 and 4, as you say, are at an unfair advantage.
And it's just not the elected officials who are at unfair advantage. It's citizens who live in Ward 2 and 4. They must decide to run for mayor or board of supervisors, whereas if you live in Ward 1 and Ward 3, every 2 years you could run for either office with no jeopardy. It's unfair to citizens as well as to the elected body themselves. So it's a fair, unfair advantage across half the community in some respects.
Well, the issue that Donna brought up from past charters discussions, and you think about it, we've talked about tonight, Mr. Schaefer, talking about we're a city county. Now, if we go by the city system for that elections portion of our governance. If you adopted the county, look at Washoe County. They have their commissioners. Some are at large, some are in wards.
Right.
And they do rotate the election of chairperson of their commission. That rotates through. What am I missing?
The chair is elected by the board itself, not by the city.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Exactly. Thank you. That's what I'm trying to say. So that would be one way it's less disadvantageous. Anybody can be considered for chairman of the board. And that way you don't have a strong mayor system. You've got people, you're elected amongst your peers, and you're all elected the same. So there's no unfair advantage. So that might be a better, and that's something that can be done through charter. You know, that is something, and then ratified by the legislature.
Would that have to come back in an agenda item before this committee, or is that something you do on your own?
No, that would have to be considered by the committee. Yeah. I mean, we have to have it properly agendized. We can't do that tonight. It has to be properly agendized.
No, I realize that, but it would not have to have an agenda item presented to you to do that. You could do it within the committee itself.
I don't know how to answer it.
Wouldn't somebody have to propose it?
Sure. Yeah. Any member of the committee or a member of the public could propose it. Sure.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, but let's not lose sight of what Mr. Munn's comments. My understanding really is that the stagger for the terms is not set forth in the charter anyway. That's set forth in the city ordinance.
Okay. Right.
The charter doesn't address it.
Oh, okay.
I guess in theory it could, but it doesn't now, and to change this, it doesn't necessarily have to be done through the charter. Just to move this along and think of how this plays out, if this board wanted to take an action, be advisory, but asking the Board of Supervisors.
Right, except you can't change it to 6 years.
Right.
Because it would not be constitutional. So all you could do is what Chairman Joyner suggested, and to change the structure.
The change doesn't have to be made to the charter.
You wouldn't have to. No.
Anyway, so
that might be an issue to clarify that.
Yeah, that is a good clarification. It's not really in our charter. Yeah, it could be, but
and
the way to adjust is to the codes.
Right, and our role is advisory to the Board of Supervisors. If the Board of Supervisors agree that this is a problem and should have a solution, it could propose a solution, it could ask staff a recommendation on proposing a solution, that solution could be implemented through the city codes without going back to charter,
right,
without going to the legislature.
I think you have to go to legislature.
To that point, I think we're looking for a solution that could make it more fair, because I think you know, I think to make a level playing field is kind of important in this case or in this situation. Is there anything that could be changed in the ordinance where, and just bear with me here because it brings up lots of scenarios, but where an individual, if the policies or the ordinances were such, where an individual could apply to run for both the mayor's seat and a supervisor seat? Would that be the easier thing to change? I mean, what is the mechanism that when Mr. Shirk said he goes down to Mr. Glover's office and says, you can only apply for mayor or supervisor? And like I said, I've been going through this in my mind, like, okay, you would win your supervisor's seat but lose the mayor's election. Okay, maybe the people are okay with that. Maybe there's an individual that win mayor, but you get to maintain your seat as a supervisor if you're an incumbent. You don't have to give it up. I don't know where that language is. I don't know if that where that is in our city that prohibits an individual from running for both. It might be economically prohibitive.
We have a new Supreme Court opinion on that issue, so it pretty much has been resolved as far as I'm aware.
Right.
Our state Supreme Court has declared that in Reno's city charter, which is almost verbatim, the same as ours, it's pretty gosh darn close, right? At least for the mayor, election of mayor, or senior mayor and supervisor, it's the same office. And you read it, the mayor really doesn't have nominal additional duties, but it's, of course, you're treating it as the same office. He doesn't really have greater powers. But the reason why I was talking about procedurally how this would play out was because our role is advisory to the Board of Supervisors. If they thought it was an issue, they could correct it through charter, or they could correct it through city ordinance. And they have the power to act on that. And I'm curious if this is it's an interesting issue, a good explanation. I'm wondering if the Board of Supervisors has heard this or stated opinions on it.
At this juncture, no, they haven't, because my discussion has only been with Alan, and from that discussion, then I put this agenda item together. I didn't bring an agenda item to the board.
Well, with the explanation that really they're staggered by the city ordinance, it seems natural to offer the Board of Supervisors an opportunity to review this as an ordinance issue, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In my mind.
Yeah, I agree. Donna, do you have a question?
Randy, what would it take to make it to where everybody runs as a Board of Supervisors?
In the county commission?
Like a county commission? You would have to change the charter, because the office of the mayor is created in the executive department, and then it's repeated in the legislative department as being a member of the Board of Supervisors.
So
it crosses over into both departments.
So we could make a request that all individuals run as a Board of Supervisor, and that the mayor is selected by their peers, the Board of Supervisors, and they rotate years of being the mayor.
Theoretically, you could change the charter to do that. Say, we're going to follow a county commission model. And you could even use the county commission statutes that says, you know, like every so often the chair is reelected, blah, blah, blah. You don't have to reinvent the wheel, but you would have to change the charter to do that. I think you would have to consider whether all five members would be in this five separate wards, or whether one member would run at large, but from that group, someone would be elected mayor by their peers.
I'll tell you, I've heard Alan discuss this issue, not this particular issue, but the thing of wards. It'd be a lot easier to leave our wards alone and just create that one position that runs at large. A lot of counties do that, and that makes a lot of sense.
And not to lose sight of it, what is equal for one should be equal for all, and this isn't equal across the board. When you look at citizens, they must, those that live in Ward 1 and 3 can make the option to run as they see fit at any time. Those citizens who want to be involved and run for elected officials are limited what they can and cannot do by the discretion of the charter or city ordinance, whichever one. That's why, you know, my discussion with Alan led me to believe this is where I should come first. I didn't think to go to the Board of Supervisors first. So, because it is across the board fairness we're looking for.
I think, though, after our discussion, it's become a different request.
Probably.
Right.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
On the other hand, I mean, since we're talking in theory, yeah, you could impose the restriction that his ward experienced on all the wards, that they couldn't run for mayor without vacating their seat, if you wanted to make it completely fair.
Uh-huh.
That or possibly changing the term of the supervisors, not the mayor. They must be 4 years. I mean, not to make him six, but to make him less. Just, well, I'm just throwing it out there.
Let's make the mayor run every 3 years.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. I think we'll have some public comments.
Okay.
Oh, Ms. Bagwell, public comments open.
Lori Bagwell. Maybe I just want to comment the concern he had of the two wards. The opposite impact happens for those that sit as the supervisor of the opposite wards. They would only serve a maximum between both the mayor position and the supervisor position, 10 years. He has the full opportunity to serve 12. If I were to cut half of mine off to try and run for mayor and was successful in that, I'd only get to serve 10. So I think that we all face elections with grace, and you decide what's right for you and the constituents that you serve. And so I don't think you're going to have a win on this one that doesn't disenfranchise a group or a set. You have to just decide what's right and what you want to do at the moment in time. And so I don't think this is an issue that can be addressed. So you just, right? You can do 10 years or you can do 12 years and throw your hat in. If you want to run for mayor, run for it. That's my opinion.
Mr. Shirk, what about that last suggestion that Mr. Munn had about what if we disenfranchised all sitting board members from running for mayor?
Well, I can't speak for anybody but myself, and if that was an agenda item that came forward, then I would look at it. But, I mean, in theory, I guess, you know, throwing your hat in and giving up 2 years is your right to do, as Ms. Bagwell expressed. But it is not fair across the board. If I want to sacrifice two years of my elected position, I'll make that decision. But you're limiting me to my opportunity to run or not run. You can't do that. That is far different than Ms. Bagwell's discussing. As to the, as Mr. Munn discussed, I think it's a probability. I can't speak how I would vote on that. I would have to look at it, but if it's an agenda item, we would look at it.
I think there is it Reno that has that policy that they had all those mayors running, and there was 18, I think. And there was one person who wanted to run, and she was not allowed to because she had been a previous board member. I don't know that I like that. I think that's just as discriminatory as what Ward 2 and 4 are going through. And I would rather see a opportunity for everybody to be a board of supervisor and then select their own mayor and rotate them, and at least that would make it fair.
You know, the issue there in Reno wasn't that They couldn't run because they had been a former council member. It was they couldn't run. There were several of them. They couldn't run because they had been termed out. They had spent their 12 years that Nevada law now allows. And they were in that form of government with where the mayor votes, unlike Sparks where they don't. They have term limits just like a council member. In Sparks, the mayor doesn't vote. That person doesn't have term limits. Say, so that's a differentiation that's made in the governance model. So that's why they couldn't run. They're termed out. They would consider those work terms and those years were expended. They couldn't run again for another IRSAT's council member seat because the mayor is just another council member. That's why. But, yeah, I think this discussion is good. I think the idea of going to a county model where you're elected amongst your peers, it opens up the field for everybody that way. So that might be something to discuss with the board and pass that on. I don't know. That's a major wholesale change for the city to consider, though. I mean, that's a.
Yeah, I would. That is a major change, and I think as the capital city, we ought to be really, really careful about what we do with regard to that. I would just, hey, let's add another minute to this. But if the state Supreme Court has, and I am not an attorney, so please forgive me, I'm just an engineer. So, but. If the state Supreme Court has ruled out the ability for an individual to run concurrently for, in the same election, a board of supervisor and a mayor because that's the same position, then how can a sitting member of the board of supervisors who holds that position run for mayor? Isn't it the same position?
Yeah, they would give the one up.
So... Well, in the scenario that Mr. Shirk is putting forward, he's saying that, you know, you can continue to serve as a member of the board and run for mayor.
Right.
And if you lose, you continue to serve your term out. But you're running for the same office you hold.
They're the same office for the purposes of term limits. But they are different offices.
And I would just point out, just an observation, if you've been elected as a board member and you run halfway through your office for the office of mayor and you lose, how effective are you going to be as a board member in the last 2 years of your term? May I just throw that up for discussion? I mean, because you've just lost an election, against the person that is now your chairman. So I mean, it's a risk reward thing. You know, it isn't a fait accompli. I mean, there's significant downside to it.
There is, but there isn't. I'll tell you, there was a couple decades ago, there was a Carson City supervisor that ran for another office. It wasn't a local office; it was a state office. While she was on the board, she lost that state election. She had one of the best political statements. Responses I've ever heard in my life. She said, it's not a defeat. It's a mandate of the people. They want me to stay here and do my job in Carson City. And it was great. It was classic. I mean, it's just, I never forget that. And that's it. So, no, you're running for one office, why you don't know? Nah, it's okay. It's a mandate of the people.
If I can throw out one more thought here, and hopefully we'll be moving on shortly. But, I made a comment earlier that we have a lot of moving parts. Right now we have a proposal for ward-only voting. I mean, imagine how confusing it becomes if someone throws out a proposal right now to change the way the mayor is elected. Especially the thought of moving to ward, potential for moving to ward-only voting. We have four wards, four supervisor, one mayor who votes same voting power as the supervisors do. But the mayor is voted at large. So if we're going to ward-only voting for four supervisors, how is the mayor going to be elected? If we have that, then that's the way we do it. That's the way we do it now. You can't go to the county system. And I'm saying, so you can't really have that kind of proposal going while there's a proposal going for ward only voting. Math isn't going to add up. You're going to be short of one of your elected officials if all that goes forward at the same time.
I'll tell you, though, we're not creating the wheel here. It's done in a lot of places just exactly that way. I think Capital County has a good ring to it.
All right.
Other comments?
We do need to move on. So it's good discussion. I think we can forward the discussion onto the board, but I don't think we're going to make any decisions here on that particular issue. So
do you want an agenda item going forward to consider the county commission aspect?
Well, I'm going to ask the board that right now. If there's any action on this discussion that anyone would like to make.
I think it's a good idea to look at being more like a county commission. It's been requested before. I think it needs to be looked at again, obviously. I see some discriminatory problem here. And even if we don't do anything with it, I'm sure there's a good possibility that the legislature will do something with it.
Mr. Chairman, that we'd go way off track from what our action item is to vote in that manner. I mean, it certainly, you know, any one of you could direct that another agenda item come back at the next meeting that addresses that subject, and then you can address it on this merits.
I think that's good, counsel. I was going to suggest that we do that or just take it forward as a discussion item to the board. But and again, I just want to reinforce one thing. If anybody does want to formulate an item to come back for action, you don't have to change the name of Carson City just because you're changing the governance model in the election process. It doesn't change anything. That we've been called city-county for so long, and we're a city when we want to be a city, and we're a county when we want to be a county. We take advantage of the tax structure by being county. Actually, I think it's genius. I don't know why more cities and counties haven't done this, because it's a great advantage tax-wise and governance-wise for our community. San Francisco is a city-county. There's other models around the nation. It's a great thing. It's a best-kept secret in Nevada, I think. But it doesn't – changing your governance model doesn't change the name of what you want to call yourself. We'll always be the capital city, obviously. But I'm not advocating one way or the other. But
why don't you ask Mr. Shirk if he'd like it back?
If you'd like what back?
An agenda item.
Oh, Mr. Shirk, would you like to come back with another agenda item based on what you've heard tonight and reformulate your request? We have other meetings coming up. Not many. Maybe just one, but...
Well, I will wait to see what this committee does, and then I'll make a decision after that. What your decision is, I'll look at it and reevaluate it.
Very good. Okay, again, I'll ask a question. Is there any action right now that we'd like to take on the agenda item before us, or be advised you can reformulate something and come back at a later date? Okay, I see no action. We will move on to item 10. This is Supervisor Shirk's final item, discussion and possible action regarding when the Board of Supervisors has an agenda item that requires the Board to vote and approve on two different dates on the same agenda item, for example, imposing a tax, then prior to the second meeting of the Board, that the minutes of the first meeting be presented to the public and to the Board. Okay, Mr. Shirk.
For the record, Jim Shirk. Thank you, Chairpersons. Again, this is something in reference that that has happened at the Board of Supervisors, and where we have an agenda item, we have minutes of the meeting, and then it comes back to us prior to the minutes from that meeting getting approved to the board for the second prior to the second reading of the same agenda item that must require a second vote. I think it's fair and equitable to the community that we provide the minutes of the meeting from the first meeting prior to voting at the second meeting on the same agenda item, so that we, not only the board, but members of the community, can read the minutes of the meeting which dealt with the agenda item which was voted on the first time, and we're now meeting as a Board of Supervisors and voting on as the second time. Now, the minutes of the meeting have to be given back or produced per se, and Randy will probably correct me if I'm wrong, within 30 days. But we're not getting them within 30 days. And in some examples, the second meeting of the Board of Supervisors is prior to the 30 days, so you wouldn't get the minutes of the meeting anyway. Again, I brought this agenda item here because I thought it would maybe have to do a charter or a recommendation from this board to do the research on something, and on all of my agenda items, to do the research and make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. I felt that was my best option, and it would save a lot of time. If this board can look at it, evaluate it, and make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors, I think it has much more of an impact at that level. Plus, I don't have to do all the legwork, so I can come here and ask you for your recommendation on this as well. I think it's fair and equitable for the community, for the Board of Supervisors, and for the citizens to have the minutes of the meeting prior to a vote of an agenda item that requires a second vote.
Questions from Mr. Shirk?
On his issue? On his request? Again, I am going to ask Mr. Munn to give us his input on this because I don't know how we might address it.
But. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is one of those math word problems you get in the middle school that you just run home crying to mom and dad because there's a lot of numbers and issues to consider. It's driven by the fact that under the charter, we establish regular meetings, which are adopted by the code. And the board meets first and third Thursdays of every month. The charter also says that you can't adopt an ordinance except at a regular meeting. And then the charter also says that after your first reading, you've got to give 10 days notice before you adopt an ordinance, then it has to be published. And that on the other end, you can't go more than 45 days once you do publish that notice that you're going to adopt an ordinance. So it gets down to a circumstance where you have all of these charter requirements that are kind of paralleling the statutory requirements for a county commission as to how to adopt an ordinance. And it becomes that numbers game of hitting a meeting. So the way it works now and has worked for decades is that you have first reading. The clerk runs down and publishes it so that by the time it meets in 2 weeks, the 10-day notice has been met. Because if you push it out too far, you can make it to the third meeting after that and stay within the 45 days, but you can't go a whole extra month without starting over. And the problem becomes in the whole scenario is just practical staffing. The clerk's office has to produce the minutes from the meeting. Under the open meeting law, they have 30 working days to get those minutes out. To get those minutes from first reading to second reading and get it in the packet that goes to the board, I think I calculated they would have 4 working days to get those minutes done and in the packet to the next board meeting to do the normal cycle that we would do in adopting an ordinance. If they went the full 30 days, it would push us past the 45 days. So meaning if the board said, well, we're not going to do second reading until we have our minutes, then that's going to push us past the 45, and we're going to have to start over again in the charter. So it's complicated. And it's the way it is because someone figured this out eons ago, and that's been the system. It's kind of like, you know, that government thing. This is the way we've always done it. And there's reasons why it's been doing that. We've done it this way for a long time. And it becomes really critical when you're doing ordinances that result in bond counsel and bond issues and making sure that everything gets rolled up and everyone can sign at the bottom line and say, yes, we satisfied the charter and the statutes and the Constitution in adopting this ordinance. It's got to be a system that works like clockwork or mistakes will happen.
And isn't some of that, Randy, that's like you mentioned, that's state statute, some of those requirements, right?
These numbers come, the state statute is 35 days for a county, but our charter gives us 45 days. So we've given us a little bit more cushion to get it done.
Mr. Chairman, just speaking for myself here, and that sounds like a lot like that Schoolhouse Rock show, How a Bill Becomes a Law, except this goes a lot further than that. It would be challenging for me to be helpful or constructive on this without either getting a crash course on these dates or having something in front of me at a lookout so we could really bear down and see where the bottleneck is. Personally speaking, that would be the best that I could do on this issue. I'm not It's hard to wait in the middle of this one.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
I just want to make one comment, and then I'll let Mr. Shirk respond, and Mr. Nunn. The one thing I know is that the state has allowed, and we've adopted for economy, that you can get from the meeting the tape and listen, and we have abbreviated our minutes for practicality. So if it's an issue, a tax issue was your example, and you want to hear who said what, who voted what, you can get that. Or if it's a real important issue like a budget item coming up, I've seen board members request, can I get this item of who voted or who said, can I get that discussion? But you can go to those tapes. That's the one good thing about technology now. You can go online and tap into the tapes and listen to a meeting. Aren't those available soon after the meeting? I mean, you can go and do your own research and find that. And that, to me, because that four-day thing, that's real. You would crunch that into such a period. The staff, we don't have the staff we used to. That, to me, would be a solution. If there's a pertinent item, you go listen to it, you know?
If I may. Yeah. I agree with everything Mr. Munn said. I mean, it is a number crunching from his explanation. I understand that. And to look at the tapes and view that, that's great, except we have citizens, and we have to think at large, not just privy to the board members to go view all of this, but they're entitled to the minutes of the meeting prior to this coming back. Now, I'm not speaking from a board of supervisor on this. I'm speaking as a citizen. I have a right to the minutes of the meeting prior to that second vote. I understand that the complications with the deadlines and the time that it takes to do all this, but if no one brings up issues, we keep going. And so I think this is something that needs to be addressed and looked at, you know, if not today, in the future or something, because other important matters could come before the board that citizens are entitled to the minutes of the meeting, not a tape, a lot of, you know, I'm just saying across the board.
Okay. And I'm not speaking of videotape. I'm talking about audio. And you can go right to the item and right to the point, but it's splitting hairs.
But again, it's that citizen must have the ability to access that. When I don't think that should be a requirement to be a citizen of Carson City. You must have this to get this. I think this should be accessed easy and free.
Well, again, I can understand your concern. And I think the Board of Supervisors have the opportunity. The mayor can call a meeting at any time. If there was a need to review an ordinance on a separate date or something when the minutes were available.
Not for an ordinance can only be done at a regularly scheduled meeting.
It can.
Correct. Which Randy just indicated.
You can have a workshop, you could talk about an ordinance, but you can't do a first reading or a second reading.
Right.
It has to be at a regular meeting.
So literally it puts the clerk's office on a four-day turnaround time. That's the bottom line. There's a four-day turnaround time for them to get those things prepared in time to get it published, to meet the posting deadlines for the open meeting law requirements and still accomplish it. And it would be an allocation of, I mean, I don't know how hard or how long it takes them to do that, but from the staff perspective, we would have to add staff to the clerk's office. We would absolutely have to have staff. Now, I do know, and I can add, that I know that Alan Glover has discussed some processes to improve the development of agendas, but I don't believe that affects things on the back end, on the minute side of things. It's on the front end where agenda preparation would be done a bit differently than the way, and you might be able to shave, I don't know, maybe a day off that, the process we go through now.
If I may, thank you. And I understand what's being said here by city staff. But again, we're not asking for the total. I'm not asking for the total minutes of the total meeting. I'm asking for the minutes of the meeting of that agenda item. So for turning around one agenda item and getting the minutes to the board and to the public, you're looking at one agenda item, not the whole meeting, just that one agenda item that could be produced. I don't think it's going to take a workforce of another person to do one agenda item from the discussion from the prior board meeting to bring it to the board at the second meeting. I don't think it's that difficult. I don't think it's that hard.
So to understand, you're proposing to not do a full set of minutes.
Yeah, you're,
no, I'm asking for, I don't think it needs to be. Again, I'm not a legal person. I'm not the district attorney here, but he can let me know. But, and I just thought of this after your statement. I'm not taking away from your statement. I think it's valid. But what I'm saying is, if that's the case, then why can't we just have the one agenda item, the minutes of that agenda item, be produced and brought forward? That was just a question, I guess. I should have stated it.
And so what would the, I'm trying to understand, what would the difference between that be and just having it viewed, as Chairman Joyner said, where you watch that section?
Again, I said, going back to, you're telling citizens you must have the accessibility to go to that tape. I'm not asking for the Board of Supervisors. I'm not here asking for that.
No, I understand that. So the to carry it forward, if she produces minutes for only that section, and I'll let Randy address that, if she produces minutes for only that section, where would those become available? And wouldn't they be available in the same place as the video?
No.
Where?
Totally different.
Where are they available?
Well, right now, if those minutes were produced, they have to go into the packet. They would have to be posted in all the same places the next Board of Supervisors meetings are posted with backup. They would have to be here at the minute. Well, so when a citizen walked in here, they could read the previous Board of Supervisors' minutes of the meeting.
Okay.
They'd be here.
The only thing that's posted, though, that we're required to post is the agenda. We're not required to post anything but the agenda. So, I mean...
Yeah, anything in the packet, once it goes to the board, has to be sent out to everybody in the mailing list. So,
but not
in
posted.
That sense.
But not posted.
Not physically posted.
Right, because we would be posting documents. As you know, the packets that you get are rather large. We'd be posting huge.
Quite large.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make it difficult. I'm really not, believe it or not. I'm trying to represent citizens in such a fashion. I don't think it's that difficult to do. That's my opinion. Maybe it is. I'm not a recorder, so I don't know how difficult that is, and please bear with me on that. But if something is so important that we have to have a second reading before we pass it, I think it's just as important to have the minutes of the first meeting be provided to us. To us, when I say us, I mean the citizens.
Yeah.
Okay.
I get that.
Okay. So I'll leave it in your hands.
I'd like to make a comment. I think it's a valid point. I think that if the content of the minutes of a meeting that discusses an item that would require a second reading and the review of the board members as well as the public should be included in that packet. Information germane to the discussion and the decision-making abilities for the body and for the public at large should probably be in that packet. And I understand what Mr. Shirk is saying. I think if just the circumstances, we don't release the minutes of the board meetings until they've been reviewed and approved. So they have to be on an agenda. They have to be approved by the board before we release them to the public. And so I'm not sure that's a bad suggestion to say, would it be possible? But I think you'd have to find a way at the beginning of the meeting to say that these minutes for this agenda item are being, if it's 30 days, somewhere in the board's meeting, 30 days away, not 2 weeks away, the first and third Thursdays, but you approve minutes, but for meetings that were how long ago? A month ago? Hopefully. Right. And so, I can see the logistics of that. But if that information is germane to the item that is going to be discussed for a second reading, I don't know what bearing the minutes have as far as packet information and that kind of stuff.
Well, the open meeting law is the only thing that requires the minutes. And the minutes are a summary of what was stated. They're not verbatim. There's not like a transcribed court document. If you want all the detail, you're going to have to get the tape. So their legal significance is only in the sense of documenting what happened in total, in summary, and who voted what. The retention schedule on those is, I think it's 6 years, but on the tape it's like a year. So the priority is that the public record would reflect essentially what happened, but not a verbatim item.
And I think I would just add that if you had a rather lengthy discussion on a topic, that, as Randy said, you would almost have to go to the tape if you wanted the full background of everything as opposed to a 3 or 4 paragraph summary, which you know is all that you get in the minutes. It would be nearly impossible to produce an accounting of an hour and a half topic in the minutes, especially in 4 days.
So let me ask you one thing, Randy. Did you state just a moment ago that the summaries are required for 6 years, but the tape, which would be your verbatim that you could avail yourselves of, that's only required to be kept for 1 year?
Let's see. The minutes shall be deemed to be the permanent value and must be retained by the public body for 5 years. I said 6. I was wrong. The tape. The tape must be retained by the public body at least 1 year after adjournment. That's under 241.035 of the open meeting law.
That's amazing. Okay. Thank you.
Wow. And I think we have to remember here that nothing in those minutes necessarily become a part of the ordinance. The ordinance is written. It's in the packet. All of the backup for that ordinance in the second, all of the important documents that need to be there, the language, the references, the minutes and what was talked about in the meeting don't become a part of the ordinance in that discussion. So.
And as a practical matter, in my experience in local government, second reading has hardly ever an event. Everything's hammered out before first reading, and then the second reading is usually kind of rote, where someone gets up and the chair asks, has there been any comments, any suggestions, any changes? And 99.9% of the time it's nothing, and then they move for a second reading and adoption.
Because if there's any major discussion or amendment, you'd have to start over. It's not the second reading. Right.
I'm not trying to sound rude here, but that doesn't necessarily make it right that they don't have the minutes, even though the second reading may be just a second reading. Doesn't really make it right that the people don't have that available to them, and especially the elected officials that are making the decisions.
My only comment is we really can't afford to do it the way it's right. I mean, there's a lot of corners government cuts because we just can't afford to do it the way we would really like to do it. That's reality.
The state has reinforced that. They've allowed local governments to do that. We used to have extensive minutes. They were nice, but they were very expensive to produce, we found out. Yeah. Okay. Mr. Schaefer, did you have any action you want to take on this item? Any other discussion? Any public discussion? Open public hearing? I think it was a great discussion. I think it brought out a lot of issues that a lot of folks weren't aware of. Nope. Again, this is a discussion item, I think, with no action, but it will be one of those we discuss with the board when we meet, and it may lead to a process improvement. I think as a board member, you have the right to, you know, request additional information on specific items before they come back to you, so you're in a better position than anyone. But it's a great idea of process improvement on individual matters, maybe on budget items, maybe on tax issues, you know, not every second reading, but certain ones, I mean, obviously. So, all right. We're going to move on to our final public comment for the evening. Anybody that wants to talk on an item that we haven't discussed tonight, maybe for future discussion? If not, we're going to go on to our possible action to adjourn. But before we do that, I want to discuss our next meeting. It's going to be on June 3rd, 3 p.m. in this room, June 3rd. So anybody out there that wants to refine an item or bring an item before us, please, get to City Hall, the city manager's office, as soon as possible to get that item, because this is a pretty quick turnaround
to our next meeting. The deadline for that is probably going to be the end of this week.
End of this week.
Monday's a holiday. June 3rd is a Friday? I'm not working on my calendar.
No.
The
check is Tuesday.
June 2nd is a Monday. So June 3rd is a Tuesday. Don't hold me to it, but I think it's going to be this Friday, if not before.
So May 23rd. We're looking at May 23rd, 2 days from now. All right.
No. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. This is the 20th.
Yep.
And it could be a little wiggle room, but yeah. So, all right. Any other items before the board tonight? Any discussion, comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We're adjourned. Thank you very much. Thank you.